to the Phet Liffen Report. Today is National Prayer Day. Today is a day that we should all be celebrating and remembering who is the living God. So since this is a Christian news show, I always start with the scriptures, and today we're starting with Hebrews 5:1. For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. Well, high priests are from men. They're not angels. They are representatives of us to God, so that he may offer gifts and sacrifices for sin. These are things that are freely given, not demanded. There is no mandatory taxation. There's no demand to give this or that. God waits for that free gift of yourself. As for the sacrifice for sin, Jesus was both God and man holy. He died paying that price for our sins. His blood covers the penalties so that we so deserve for our sins. It is him and him alone who comes to the Father for you. Yet this is dependent on your choice to accept what he has already done for you. Have you accepted the work of Jesus that he has done for you? Dear Lord Jesus, may you and you alone be praised. It is your sacrifice for my sins that have saved me from a debt I can never pay. Lord, may you be glorified, and may others see the glory so that you can know the peace, so that they too can know the peace in finding you. Now, I have quite the show for you today. What I mean by that is today I'm going to share with you two chapters in my book that you will only be able to get in my book. They will not be in print anyplace else unless someone decides to quote me. But I want to talk about these two chapters because this is Ramadan. Ramadan is the time that Muslims kill more Muslims. They kill as many non-Christians. It's a very, very violent time. I'll get into more of that later. But what I think this has to, we need to talk about before I get into this part is why all of this happens. So this first chapter, which will be chapter 19, well, the last two chapters in my book, that's what I'm reading to you, is the last two chapters in my book that will be coming out very soon. I'm debating about publishing it this coming week. We will see. God just puts things, he's been putting things together and making things surprisingly work, so we'll see what happens. This chapter is titled, Is There an Islamic Social Norm of Hatred Against All That Is Non-Muslim? The United States of America was founded on the belief that people should be able to worship God as they pleased. The Brownists in England were being persecuted by the Church of England for expressing a disgust towards the church and her leaders for compromising on Christian doctrines. After a period of strife and persecution, they were encouraged to find their way to America on the Mayflower. We know them as pilgrims today. The USA had many arguments on religion since its colonial days, even an argument about a claim that there exists, quote, separation of church and state in the Constitution, even though that phrase is not in the Constitution but can be found in the Communist Manifesto. In Europe, after the period of the Inquisition, countries were tired of persecution because of religion and fought for freedom of religion. The belief that people should be able to worship as they desire became very important. Unlike citizens in America, Canada, and most of Europe, a freedom to worship God in the way you choose is forbidden in most Islamic countries. Worshipping a God other than Allah is often considered illegal. Christians can be charged with shirk, the worst of all crimes under Sharia, the crime of polytheism. This is because Muslims are taught that Christians believe in three gods. The Islamic social norm against freedom of religion was established in the Quran. This comes right from Quran 385. If anyone desires a religion other than Islam, submission to Allah is what we're talking about. That's what Islam means, submission to Allah. Never will it be accepted of him. and in the hereafter. He will be in the ranks of those who have lost all spiritual good. Again, that's from Surah 385. From Surah 319, it says, the only religion in the sight of God is Islam, and their God is Allah. I'd rather use that term. Islam is an exclusive faith. It not only excludes those of other faiths, it allows for physical attacks, fights, wars, and more as a method of spreading Islam. Islam allows Muslims to unite to stand against unbelievers. Where do I get this from? Let's start with Surah 48:29. Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and those who are with him are strong against unbelievers, but compassionate among each other. Surah 9:73. O Prophet, strive hard against the unbelievers and the hypocrites, and be firm against them. Their abode is hell, an evil refuge indeed. Surah 3:151. We will cast terror into the heart of those who disbelieve, because they set up with Allah that for which he has sent down no authority, and their abode is the fire, and evil is the abode of the unjust. And I hope you heard that part. Think about that. This is the person that is the we, is Allah, is casting terror, so Allah is responsible for terrorism. Hope you caught that. And if any who believe, this comes from Surah 48:13, this one. If any who believe not in Allah and his messenger, we have prepared for those who reject Allah a blazing fire. You would think from reading these verses that Islam is engaging in a war against all who are not Muslims. But that is only part of where hatred against others is placed. Think about that. There is also a hatred against those who call themselves Muslim and are deemed hypocrites. This is why the great apostasy, the Ridda War, happened before Islamic expansion. Surah 973 tells us that Muslims have no problem killing other Muslims who they deem not Muslim enough. Now, that's happening during Ramadan. It's hard to accept, but it is happening. Let's talk about this. Hatred and violence against hypocrites is deemed historically as preferable by Muslims versus engaging in jihad. This is because the acts of hatred against hypocrites are seen as an act of purification of Islam. So why is this possible? How could a religion permit attacking their own? Well, the Quran has the answer. They wish you would disbelieve as they believe, so they would be alike. So do not take from among them allies until they emigrate for the cause of Allah. Hijra. But that's migrate for the cause of Allah, that's Hijra. But if they turn away, then seize them and kill them wherever you find them. And take not from among them any ally or helper, except for those who take refuge with a people between yourselves and whom is a treaty, or those who come to you. Their hearts strained at the prospect of fighting you or fighting their own people. And if Allah had willed, he could have given them power over you, and they would have fought you. So if they remove themselves from you and do not fight you and offer you peace, then Allah has not made for you a cause for fighting against them. You will find others who wish to obtain security from you and to obtain security from their people. Every time they return to the influence of disbelief, they fall back into it. If they do not withdraw from you or offer you peace or restrain their hands, then seize them and kill them wherever you overtake them, and those we have made for you against them a clear authorization. Believe it or not, that entire thing is one verse. It's Surah 489. This comes from Surah 9, verses 11 to 12. But if they repent, establish prayer and give zakat, and then they are your brothers in religion. And we detail the verses for all people who know. But if they break their oaths after their treaty and defame your religion and fight the leaders of disbelief, for indeed there are no oaths sacred to them, fight them that they may cease. Even hadiths justify killing those who leave Islam. If one simply does not agree with one little thing, Bukhari is one of the most respected collection of hadiths. This is from Bukhari 52-60. Narrated Ikrima. Ali burnt some people, and this news reached Ibn Abbas, who said, "Had I been in his place, I would not have burnt them. As the Prophet said, don't punish anyone with Allah's punishment. No doubt I would have killed them, for the Prophet said, if somebody, a Muslim, discards his religion, kill him." Here we go again. This one is from Sahih Bukhari, 69:23. Narrated Abu Burda. Abu Musa said, "I came to the Prophet along with two men from the tribe of Asharayim on my right and the other on my left, with Allah's apostle was brushing his teeth with a siwak. And both men asked him for some employment. The Prophet said, O Abu Musa, O Abdullah bin Qais, I said by him who sent you with the truth, these two men did not tell me what was in their hearts, and I did not feel or realize that they were seeking employment. As if I were looking now at his sawakti being drawn to a corner under his lips, and he said, we never or we do not appoint for our affairs anyone who seeks be employed. But, O Abu Musa, or Abdullah bin Qais, go to him." The Prophet then sent Mu'ad bin Jabal after him. And when Mu'ad reached him, he spread out a cushion for him and requested him to get down and sit on the cushion. Behold, there was a fettered man beside Abu Mis. And Mu'ad asked, "Who is this man?" Abu Mis said, "Is a Jew, and became a Muslim and then reverted back to Judaism." Abu Mis requested Mu'ad to sit down. But Mu'ad said, "I will not sit down till he has been killed. This is the judgment of Allah and his apostle for such cases," and repeated it three times. Then Abu Musa ordered that man be killed, and he was killed. Abu Musa added, "Then we discussed the night prayers, and one of us said, I pray and sleep, and I hope that Allah will reward me for my sleep as well as for my prayers." Hatred. So the apostate was put to death without a second thought. It was so easy for them to perform the task that they talk about Allah rewarding them. If it is easy to kill those who leave Islam, how much easier is it to demand such a thing as no other religions? Under the first caliph, Abu Bakr, those who did not want to pray at a certain time were attacked. Those who didn't want, some were praying at the same time. They just didn't want to send Abu Bakr the money. These acts of violence are seen as uniting Islam. Narrated Abu Huraira. The Prophet said, this also comes from Sahih Bukhari, 657, "No prayer is harder for the hypocrites than the Fajr and the Isha prayers. And if they knew the reward for these prayers at the respective times, they would certainly present themselves in the mosque, even if they had to crawl." The Prophet added, "Certainly, I decided to order the Mu'ad Hadin, a call maker, to pronounce Ikama and order a man to lead the prayer and then take a fire flame to burn all those who had not left their houses so far for the prayer along with their houses." Are these things happening today? Is Islam killing off those who leave it or disagree with Islam in one slight way? If so, they must be teaching hatred of all that is not Islam. That would mean that anyone and anything not Islamic would receive no respect. Could this be why presidential candidate Donald Trump stated, "I think Islam hates us"? Was Donald Trump right about Islam in 2016? These are hadiths that discuss the refusal to allow others to believe differently about God. Here we go. It has been narrated by Umar al-Khatib that he heard the messenger of Allah say, I will expel the Jews and the Christians from the Arabian Peninsula and will not leave any but Muslim. Sahih Muslim, that comes from 1767. This can be viewed in a simpler manner. Does Islam teach hatred of other religions? Does it teach disrespect towards any who hold any other beliefs than a belief in Muhammad and his God Allah? So reread that hadith if you want. What do you think? I'm going to read that one more time for those who didn't get it. This is what the Messenger of Allah said. I will expel the Jews and Christians from the Arabian Peninsula and will not leave any but Muslims. What do you think? Does that sound like it's teaching hatred? If it teaches hatred of other religions, would it then teach hatred of those who leave Islam? Islam requires those who leave it to be labeled apostates. Apostates can be killed under Sharia. The Islamic doctrine of Awala Wala Bara, mentioned in chapter 3, which is earlier in the book, can also be translated as loving and hating, according to Rahman Ibrahim. In January of 2020, the two jihadis that stabbed and killed two police officers in Russia released a picture of themselves holding their knives before going on jihad. Underneath, they wrote, love and hatred is based on Tawhid, oneness of Allah. This oneness is both loving and hating, according to this teaching. This claim that hatred is based on their God, Allah, is something often overlooked as impossible to accept by the rest of the world, even though the Quran has been around for over 1,000 years. Very few have looked at it and examined it for how much it teaches and embraces a culture of hatred of those outside the faith and a love for those inside. Usama Dakdak points out that daily prayers are immersed in teaching this hatred through the rote memorization and repetition of Surah 1, which Muslim children learn at an early age, and which all Muslims repeat up to 17 times in their 5 daily prayers. Let's just read Surah 1. In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful, it says all praises due to Allah, Lord of the world, the entirely merciful, especially merciful, sovereign of the day of recompense. It says, it is to you we worship, you we ask for help, guide us to the straight path, the path of those upon whom you have bestowed favor, any of those who evoked your anger, or of those who are astray. Well, that's all there is to Surah 1. Verse 7 refers to those who have evoked your anger or those who are astray. Who are those two groups? Well, the answer is in another English translation of the Quran. Moshin Khan's translation of verse 7 reads, the way of those on whom you have bestowed your grace, not the way of those who earned your anger, such as the Jews, nor of those who went astray, such as the Christians. Teachers understand the importance of repetition when teaching new concepts. Zig Ziglar said, repetition is the mother of learning, the father of action, what makes it the architect of accomplishment. 17 repetitions each day about those who have earned hatred and those who have gone astray is only touching on the teaching and training of hatred in Islamic culture. Anthony Robbins said, repetition is the mother of skill. Those involved in law enforcement and the military understand the importance of this phrase. They practice something 2,500 times to make their reactions instinctive, not reactive. 17 prayers times 7 days, 119 prayers a week. I'm being generous with this. Believe me, I am. 119 prayers times 4 weeks, that's 476 prayers a week, a month. 476 prayers times 12 months, that's 5,712 prayers a year. And this is all rote memorization, repeating something over and over and over again. It sinks in. These are prayers that teach Muslims that God hates Jews and that Christians have abandoned their Allah. But it is only one chapter in the Quran. Moshin Khan's translation of Surah 2, verses 8 to 9 and verse 14 is also of interest. Here's what it says. and of mankind. There are some hypocrites who say, we believe in Allah and the last day, while in fact they believe not. They think to deceive Allah and those who believe, while they only deceive themselves and perceive it not. And when they meet those who believe, they say, we believe. But when they are alone with their shaitan, devils, polytheists, hypocrites, etc., they say, truly we are with you. Verily we were but mocking. The passage here allows for distrust, even of other Muslims. Not only distrust, but a reason for anger. Sadly, this creates a paranoia, wondering who amongst the followers of Allah should not be trusted and must be excluded from amongst not only Islam itself, but each and every gathering of Muslims. Hatred against those who are not Muslim is idealized in Surah 58:22. According to Motion Khan's translation, it reads, you, O Muhammad, will not find any people who believe in Allah and the last day making friendship with those who oppose Allah and his messenger Muhammad, even though they were their fathers or their sons or their brothers and their kindred people. For such he was has written faith in their hearts and strengthen them from proofs, lights, and true guidance from himself, and we will admit them to gardens, paradise, under which rivers flow to dwell therein forever. Allah is pleased with them, and they with him. They are the party of Allah. Verily, it is the party of Allah that will be successful. Ibn Kathir, a commentator on the Quran, said that this verse has a secret meaning. Allah is well pleased with them, and they are well pleased with him. Contains a beautiful secret. When the believers became enraged against their relatives and kindred in Allah's cause, he compensated them by being pleased with them and making them pleased with him from what he has granted them of eternal delight, ultimate victory, and encompassing favor. Allah's statement. This favors the concept of honor killing. Hatred seems embedded in this faith. When they teach children about Islam, they teach concepts like, who is a real Muslim? Who is a kafir? Before going beyond and defining Islam, this can be found in a textbook for seventh grade students in Islamic schools in the United States. The book is called What Islam is All About by Yahya Emmerich. This book states, a person who rejects the message of the Shahada is called a kafir. The word comes from the Arabic term kafara, which means to cover up or hide something. A kafir is a person who covers up the truth and tries to hide it. Truth hider. Whether it is through laziness, outright rebellion, or simple ignorance, a person who does not even make the effort to obey what Allah has ordained can never be counted among the believers. They are the ones who will be unhappy in this life and punished in the next because they are false to their inner nature. That actually comes from Surah 7, 182 to 183. Verses 182 and 183 cited here are significant. The standard English translation states, but those who deny our signs, we will progressively lead them to destruction from where they do not know, and I will give them time. Indeed, my plan is firm. Let's look at Motion Khan's translation. It's a little harder. It says, those who reject our ayah, proof, evidences, verses, lessons, signs, revelations, we shall gradually seize them with punishment in ways they perceive not, and I respite them. Certainly, my plan is strong. This means that Allah does not love the person who does not believe. In fact, he seems to do the opposite in hate. So what about Muslims? Are all who consider themselves Muslims safe from being in trouble and called a kafir? Yahya Emmerich tells seventh grade American Muslims, if a person thinks that they are Muslim, but they have no faith in Islamic teachings and make no effort to make Islamic learning and practices part of their life, then they are no Muslim at all. While the section continues and tells children not to call non-Muslims kafirs, and tells them to reason unbelievers' superior manner, it has taught them to disrespect and despise the non-Muslim. Even a Muslim who is not Islamic enough should be thought of as not Muslim. Thus again sets the stage for honor killings. When children or relatives decide not to obey the Sharia, there is a penalty that can be paid. Death. In America, American law, murder is a crime punishable by death in some states. The laws have some exceptions, one of them being self-defense. In Sharia, murder is a capital crime, for which there are also allowances. Let me tell you what four of them are. The first one, a child or insane person under any circumstances. Okay, that makes sense. The second one, this says there's no penalty for the crime of killing, okay? A Muslim for killing a non-Muslim. Third exception to the rule. A Jewish or Christian subject of an Islamic state for killing an apostate from Islam because a subject of the state is under its protection while killing an apostate from Islam without consequences. Number four. This is one of the most shocking ones. A father or a mother or their fathers or mothers for killing their offspring or offspring's offspring. One such honor killing occurred in India a few days before I wrote this part on August 5th, 2020 in Karcha village in Matunda, not far from Uttar Pradesh, India. A 19-year-old woman and her alleged boyfriend were caught in a compromising position. The family members locked them in the hut and set it on fire. In Islam, a compromising position can simply be being with a member of the opposite sex who's not a family member. Without supervision, it could be that they were caught kissing. That is why the news article does not define the term. The moment these two were caught not being an example of Islam, they were condemned as not being Islamic enough and executed. Hatred is sown and cultivated in Islam against all that is not Islamic to such an extent that even family members must die if they are not Islamic enough. This is a judgment that they have left Islam. Thus, they are guilty of apostasy. So let's look at what Sharia says. In reliance of the traveler, we go to 08.0, apostasy from Islam, Rida. Leaving Islam is the ugliest form of unbelief, kufar, and the worst. It may come about through sarcasm, as when someone is told, trim your nails, it is sunnah, as he replies. I would not do it even if it were, as opposed to when some circumstances exist which exonerates him of having committed apostasy, such as when his tongue runs away with him, or when he's quoting someone, or says it out of fear. 08.1. When a person who has reached the age of puberty and is sane voluntarily apostatizes from Islam, he deserves to be killed. The wording in Sharia here allows accusations to quickly give rise to condemnation and a death sentence, such as the excuse given for many an honor killing. A wife, daughter, or son has disobeyed Allah by not obeying Sharia, and thus the parent is justified by killing them. In Germany, honor killings have gone from something you read in the news from Pakistan to something you now see while riding the bus to work. On July 6th of 2020, in the Obergunsburg district, which was known as a quiet town, a 37-year-old Afghan migrant killed his wife with a knife right on the bus in front of everyone before running off. Under Sharia, she had no right to leave him. But she had a legal right under German law. That was all he needed to take her life, a violation of Sharia. On September 5th, 2019, in King's Crossing, a subdivision in Corpus Christi, Southside, 72-year-old Muhammad Sahi killed his daughter and grandson and brutally beat to the edge of death his other grandson. This is Texas we're talking about. He quickly confessed to the crime after the brutal murder. It is thought that he viewed this as an honor killing. Horrible crime of honor killing is thought to now occur in the United Kingdom 12 times a year. Soren Kern tracked 30 honor killings in Germany in the first 5 months of 2017. A 2014 study done by the Department of Justice of the United States of America before the massive hijra into Europe and North America in 2015 had some surprising estimates. On August 21st, 2020, Le Parisien posted an article about a 17-year-old Muslim girl who fell in love with a 20-year-old man they call a Christian and moved in with him. They went to visit her parents because she missed them. They assaulted her, shaving her head, breaking her ribs, and could have continued further and killed her. But the young man who came with her broke free and grabbed local law enforcement. The numerous bruises around her ears say everything about the murderous intentions of her parents' actions of hatred against their daughter, who is not Islamic enough. The parents were charged with violence against a minor in France. Under Sharia, this would not be a crime. The parents do not see what they did as something wrong. On August 26, 2020, Yasser Abdel Said was captured after 12 years on the run because of a murder of your children is a crime in America, the heinous murder. And his eluding the police put him on the top 10 wanted list of the FBI in December of 2014. Yasser Said shot and killed his teenage daughters, Amina and Sarah. While taking them, Amina was 18, Sarah was 17, while taking them for a ride in his taxi under the pretense of getting something to eat. This act of violence was not the first one they had received at the hands of their father. Allegations of physical and sexual abuse were made by Amina and Sarah against their father to police before their mother made the choice to flee with the girls in 2007. Amina even told her others her dad would kill her if he could. Their mother, Tissy, returned to their father after not even a year apart. Dr. Phyllis Chesler, noted scholar and warrior for the rights of those suffering from Islamic gender apartheid, along with the girl's aunt, believes that Tissy took part in an elaborate ruse to trick the girls into seeing their father, knowing full well he would kill them given the chance. What had they done to warrant such hatred and evil from their father and mother? Part of this begins from birth, with the devaluing of Islamic females from birth, as shown in a previous chapter that I would have, if you read this book, picked this up. They were dating boys who were not Muslims. This, in his mind, made them apostates. Since such a thing is forbidden to Muslim women under Sharia, it brought shame on the family since women are property to Muslims. This hatred extends to killing those who claim to be Muslims and are not, in their view. This charge of blasphemy is a death sentence. Blasphemy charges in countries like Pakistan can even be leveled against American citizens. Tahir Ahmad Nassim moved to America in 1978. He was part of the Ahmadiyya sect of Muslims, which is highly persecuted and not accepted by any Muslim group for several reasons. Nassim was sharing his religious views on YouTube in America. People in Pakistan sent him an invitation in 2018 to debate his claims of being a prophet. He would just come. He accepted. The trap was set. And he went to find himself quickly arrested and charged with blasphemy. For 2 years, Nahir Nassim was in jail awaiting his trial. His lawyer is reported to have communicated a likely win because they had no evidence. But on July 29, 2020, the day Nassim was finally going to get his trial and possibly be set free to return to the United States, a 15-year-old boy entered the courtroom and shot him several times, claiming he killed Nassim in defense of Islam. This hatred of anything non-Muslim can be seen in what happened shortly after. On August 10th, 2020, The Wire out of Indonesia reported that Faisal Khan, a 15-year-old Pakistani, beams for selfies with lawyers and police. Thousands hail him in the streets as a holy warrior. One would think that this hatred of all that is not Islamic would surface quickly and be able to be seen easily. Europe is seeing this since the Great Hijra in 2015. Numerous churches and synagogues have been attacked and defaced. On August 20th, 2020, Sputnik, a Russian news source, posted an article on Muslim migrants from Somalia having confessed to setting fire to two churches in Norway because someone set fire to a Quran. The result was over 2.2 million in damage. The culture of hatred is attracted to people who find themselves behind bars and got there with a sense of anger and hatred against the world for whatever injustice they believe exists in the world. In the words of one ex-Muslim who I will call Jay, who shared about this attraction posed by the hatred and anger in Islam to those in prison, the person I know well, really surprised to hear this from him. It seems it had a special appeal for me, the anger. I've seen a lot of other brothers who were angry, who were Muslim. I felt like I would be a part of something. And by joining them, I would be angry too. And then we would just walk around with our kufis and prayer rugs looking tough, you know, and people would leave us alone because they were afraid of us. Patrick Dunleavy writes about the conversion of men to Islam in the New York State prison system in his book, The Fertile Soil of Jihad, Terrorism's Prison Connection. This came out in 2011. I do recommend you buy that book. Dunleavy was Inspector General of the Criminal Intelligence Unit of the New York State Bureau of Corrections. Dunleavy was a key figure in Operation Hades that exposed elements of an Islamic terror network that utilized prisons. This is only the tip of the iceberg. Throughout Western civilization, Islamic organizations such as the Muslim Council of Britain, MCB, and in America, we have the Council on American Islamic Relations, we call that CARE, and more are actively working to prevent an equal voice from other religions. Worse is that they are preventing factual information from being shared, and in essence, making the public ignorant of what Islam believes and teaches. The previous chapter that you can pick up when you do buy this book that I'm sharing with you talks about what happens to your freedom of speech. Think about how tied together these things are, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and the concept of hatred. Now we are in Ramadan. Ramadan is well known for the celebration of jihad, and I will back that up in a few seconds. Some of these things you just hear, it is mind-numbing. It is shocking. It is unbelievable. I don't know what else to tell you than it is horrible. Talk about jihad. I can only tell you that some of this stuff is so shocking, it's hard for me to accept. Is there an Islamic social norm that promotes war, jihad against non-Muslims? Again, I went at this from an academic point of view. When I started writing this book, I was a public school teacher. Probably the wisest thing I've done was to come at this pretty much from what we would call a social psychology point of view, because social psychology actually discusses things like social norms. I thought the part on hatred was hard. It actually took me the longest of anything I've ever had to write. It took me months to write. I couldn't accept what I was learning. My statement is, when you grow up in a family that loves you, you grow up in a family that cares for you, the concept of being taught hate is repugnant. I'd have to put it down after I have to put the topic down and walk away. It still bothers me when I think about it. Now let's talk about jihad. Is there an Islamic social norm that promotes war, jihad against non-Muslims? Whenever the topic of jihad and Islamic war against all non-Muslims comes up, people come out of the woodwork to defend Islam. Nothing you can say or do will change in their minds. Worse is that even if you show them evidence from Islamic scripture, they fat out, deny that jihad is an Islamic social norm, or worse, an actual essential doctrine of Islam. Examples of people coming out of the woodwork to defend Islam after an act of terrorism are numerous. Some of them come from our own politicians. President George W. Bush on September 20th, 2001 said, "The terrorists are traitors to their own faith, trying in effect to hijack Islam itself. The enemy of America is not our many Muslim friends. It is not our many Arab friends. Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them." Now, he said this to a joint session of Congress and to the American people live on the air, September 20th, 2001. Did George W. Bush actually do his homework? No. This statement alone by President George W. Bush created policy that constrained the intelligence community in the United States from truly learning Al-Qaeda's threat doctrine. Threat doctrine is essential knowledge for any military personnel. Military officials must know their enemy in order to win any battle. In the words of Sun Tzu, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle. Stephen Coughlin's work, to our great detriment, Ignoring What Extremists Say About Jihad, came out in May of 2007. It revealed that President Bush's words on September 20th, 2001, essentially forbid a study by members of the intelligence community into the Islamic doctrine of jihad by proclaiming that Islam was hijacked and enemy was not Islam. It didn't matter whether this was true or not. After the speech, it became off limits to truly discover what jihad is, if it was the threat doctrine of Al-Qaeda, and how far removed it was or was not from mainstream Islam. A few years later, other politicians committed the same mistake, and in the words of Stephen Coughlin, who I think is a great hero we need to pay attention to, it was indeed to our great detriment. Hillary Clinton in 2015 said, after the attack in Paris and before San Bernardino, said, "Let's be clear, Islam is not our adversary. Muslims are peaceful and tolerant people and have nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism." Even though Coughlin saw the answer, we still need to ask the question once again. Were the politicians right? Is Islam not an enemy? To those, I add my questions. One, is a social norm that promotes jihad, holy war, against non-Muslims? Two, what if Islamic scriptures proclaim jihad against non-Muslims as an active war that will not end until the whole world is Muslim? Number three, what if that's true? The responsible thing would be to look and see what Islamic scriptures, scholars, and Sharia states about jihad. Then if Islam indeed does teach jihad as a holy war against non-Muslims, there are two more very important questions that need to be considered. Is this taught in your local mosque? Is this taught in your local madrasa, an Islamic school? In the Islamic scriptures in respect to jihad. Better yet, where should one begin to look for a definition of the concept of jihad? The answer is in their law, Sharia. Sunni Islam has four Islamic schools of thought in Sharia. The International Institute of Islamic Thought gave their stamp of approval for the English translation of Umda al-Salik. In English, the book is called Umda al-Salik, a.k.a. Reliance of the Traveler. That's what it's published as, Reliance of the Traveler. It is extensive and covers everything from daily life to rules about war and more. I recommend you buy that book, Reliance of the Traveler. Sharia is defined, Sharia defines jihad as follows. This is, comes from 09.0. Jihad means to war against the non-Muslims and is etymologically derived from the word mujahada, signifying warfare to establish the religion. And it is the lesser jihad. As for the greater jihad, it is a spiritual warfare against the lower self, which is why the Prophet said as he was returning from jihad, we have returned from the lesser jihad to the greater jihad. Well, the scriptural basis for jihad, again, is still part of 09.0 jihad, scriptural basis for jihad prior to scholarly consensus is such Quranic verses as, now listen closely, these come directly from the Quran. Fighting is prescribed in Quran 2:216. Slay them wherever you find them, Quran 4:89. Fight the idolaters utterly, Quran 9:36. In such hadith as the one related by Bukhari and Muslim that the Prophet said, I have been commanded to fight people until they testify that there is no God but Allah and the Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and perform the prayer and pay zakat. If they say it, they have saved their blood and possessions from me, except for the rights of Islam over them. And final reckoning is with Allah. And the hadith reported by Muslim. To go forth in the morning or evening to fight in the path of Allah is better than the whole world and everything in it. Whoa! Wait a minute! This can't be true. That was what I first thought the moment I read this for myself. Maybe, just maybe, it's not for all believers of Islam, right? Maybe. Everything I had learned about Islam was now upside down. Had I been lied to? Was I missing? How is it possible? Just because I read a book for Muslims, by Muslims, I was learning that jihad is not just something for extremists? Stop! Extremists are people outside the norm. Jihad is being said here to be the norm. So even using the term extremist is misinformation. Maybe the hadith cited in the Sharia that states, we have returned from the lesser jihad to the greater jihad, provides an out. When you do a bit of research on this hadith, you learn that it is classified as da'if, which means weak. Credit should go to Stephen Coughlin for being one of the first to reveal that this concept came from a hadith that is labeled weak. Further research on this reveals some very interesting elements about this hadith. Again, let's put that in quotes. Wiki Islam has an entry labeled Lesser versus Greater Jihad. It cites several Islamic scholars on the topic. The article states that it is claimed that this inner jihad essentially refers to all the struggles that a Muslim may go through in adhering to the religion. For example, a scholarly study of Islam can be intellectual struggle that some allegedly may refer to as jihad. We keep going. Origins. During Prophet Muhammad's lifetime and onward to the present, the word jihad was and is almost always used in a military sense. This idea of greater and lesser jihad was a later development, which originated from the 11th century. Are you catching this? It was made up. It was added. The History of Baghdad by the Islamic scholar Al-Khatib al-Baghdadi by the way of Yahya ibn Alaf, who said, we were told by Layth on the authority of Atta, on the authority of Abu Rabah, on the authority of Jabir, who said the prophet returned from one of his battles and thereupon told us, you have arrived with an excellent arrival. You have come from the lesser jihad to the greater jihad, the striving of a servant of Allah against his desires. All four schools of Sunni jurisprudence, fiqh, as well as the Shiite tradition, all formulated in the second and third centuries after Muhammad's death, make no reference at all to the greater jihad, only to the lesser. Think about that. There was, it's a made-up ploy to fool us idiot non-Muslims. Bernard Lewis. This is just the conclusion drawn by Wiki Islam. This hadith is manufactured. It is made up, a conjecture of someone's imagination who knows to nothing about Islam, Muhammad, or jihad. This conclusion means that the ads that appear on buses and other means of mass transportation for my jihad is, was nothing more than misinformation campaign for the gullible and foolish non-Muslims to swallow. So here is one of the things that they put on buses. My jihad is to stay fit despite my busy schedule. Another one said, my jihad is to build friendships against the aisle. BS. It's misinformation. They want you to believe and swallow rather than factual information. We should be careful where we get our information. But there's more in Sharia on jihad. The law book of Sharia. Umda al-Salik, a.k.a. Reliance of the Traveler, talked about the obligation character of jihad. The obligatory character of jihad, 09.1. Jihad is a communal obligation. When enough people perform it, successfully accomplish it, it is no longer obligatory upon others. The evidence for which is the prophet's saying, he who provides the equipment for a soldier in jihad has performed jihad. The lights came on the moment I read this. I now understood why we find so many Muslims in raising money for what we call terrorism. But is terrorism the right word? After all, isn't what they do murder? Is the label terrorism a crime as a crime less severe than murder? Believe it or not, in most countries, murder is a capital offense when it's intentional, resulting in either a death penalty or life imprisonment. But terrorism, you get 20 years for that. That's it, 20 years. Doesn't matter how many you killed. That's the danger in allowing someone to be charged with terrorism. Charge them with murder. Charge them with treason. Think about it. If hatred against all that is not Islamic is a social norm, then how does jihad not fit in as part of their social norms? Hatred against even their own children is approved of if they are not Islamic enough. So what would make us think that they would not have a social norm to wage war against all who are not Islamic? Remember the topic of abrogation, which I had this, you know, I do discuss early in the book. You'll have to definitely have to purchase this book to find it. It's used to nullify passages where there is a disagreement between verses. These verses came earlier in the Quran, before Muhammad had political strength. Jasser Auda's bio states, he is the Al-Shatibi Chair of Maqasid Studies at the International Peace College, South Africa, a visiting professor for the study of Islam at Carleton University in Canada, founding director of the Maqasid Center in the Philosophy of Islamic Law in London, a professor at the University of Waterloo, Alexandria University, Islamic University of Novi Pazar, Qatar Faculty of Islamic Studies, and the American University of Sharjah in the UAE. Dr. Auda is the author of Maqasid al-Sharia, a beginner's guide. Note that he teaches at the International Peace College in South Africa. Yet in this book, he states that the verse of the sword, Surah 9:5, contradicts more than 200 other verses in the Quran. Peaceful verses. But because of the law of abrogation, most exegetes, this is from him, word for word from him, most exegetes concluded that this verse, Surah 9:5, which was revealed towards the end of the prophet's life, abrogates every contradicting verse that was revealed before it. This reveals the importance of lying and deceit in Islam, also mentioned in a previous chapter. After thinking about this and reviewing Sharia, I went back to see what one of the most respected Islamic scholars, Ibn Kathir, wrote on the alleged verse of the sword in Surah 9:5. This is what he wrote. This is the ayah of the sword. Mujahid, Amr bin Shub, Muhammad bin Ishaq, Katda, As-Sudi, and Abdur Rahman bin Zaid bin Aslam said that the 4 months mentioned in this ayah are the 4 months grace period mentioned in the earlier ayah. So travel freely for 4 months throughout the land. Allah said next, so when the sacred months have passed, meaning upon the end of the 4 months during which we prohibit you from fighting the idolaters, which is the grace period, we give them the fight and kill the idolaters wherever you may find them. Allah's statement next. Then fight the mushrikeen wherever you find them, means on the earth in general, except for the sacred area, for Allah said, and fight not with them at al-Masjid or al-Haram unless they fight you there. But if they attack you, then fight them. That's from Surah 2191. Allah said here, and capture them, executing some and keeping some as prisoners, and besiege them and lie in wait for them in each and every ambush. Do not wait until you find them. Rather, seek and besiege them in their areas and forts. Gather intelligence about them in the various roads and fairways, that what is made wide looks ever smaller to them. This way they will have no choice but to die or embrace Islam. But if they repent and perform the salah and give the zakah, then leave their way free. Verily, Allah is oft forgiving, most merciful. Abu Bakr as-Siddiq used this and other honorable ayats as proof for fighting those who refrained from paying zakah. These ayah allow fighting people unless and until they embrace Islam and implement its rulings and obligations. Allah mentioned the most important aspects of Islam here, including what is less important. Surely the highest elements of Islam, after the two testimonials, are the prayer, which is the right of Allah, the exalted and ever high, the zakah, which benefits the poor and the needy. These are the most honorable acts that creatures perform. This is why Allah often mentions the prayer and zakat together. In the two sahihs, it is that Ibn Umar said that the messenger of Allah said, I have been commanded to fight the people until they testify that there is no deity worthy of worship except Allah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, establish the prayer and pay the zakat. From Fath al-Bari 195 and Muslim 153. The Honorable Ayah 9:5 was called the Ayah of the Sword, about which Adak bin Muzhan said it abrogated every treaty and every term. Al-Afi said that Ibn Abbas commented, no idolater ever more treaty or promise of safety ever since Surah Barah was revealed. The 4 months in addition to all peace treaties conducted before Bara'ah was revealed and announced that ended by the 10th of the month, Rabi al-Akhir. If this is what adults learn about jihad, what are they teaching the children in Islamic schools about jihad? Well, what is said in a 7th grade history textbook for Muslims will shock you even more. Yeah, this textbook is the one that I read previous for Muslims here in America. What Islam is All About addresses jihad in a chapter titled the three duties. Jihad is listed as the second duty. This section states that the 1995 attack on the federal building in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, was done by a Christian terrorist, and then afterwards several masjids were burnt down. Muslim homes were vandalized, and the FBI news media were fingering Muslims as a responsible party. Timothy McVeigh was not a Christian. The FBI never said that it was an act of Islamic terrorism. In fact, they were pretty silent until they knew what happened. No mosques were burnt down, and Muslim homes were not vandalized. But why was this said if it was not true in kids' history books? Victimhood. They make themselves out to be the victims so they can get them angry. They lie to their kids. They give them the misinformation because they want them to engage in jihad. The purpose was to create the belief that there are Christians who are terrorists. On the next page, the book states that Islam is against random violence and senseless killing. According to the Quran, if you kill a life, it is as if you killed all life. Of course, the life in question is an innocent person. Quran 2190-2229-69. Well, there are three problems with this quote. The verses cited are indeed of interest also. Let's look at them. Surah 2190. And fight in the way of Allah, those who fight you. But transgress not the limits. Truly, Allah likes not the transgressors. This verse is the first one that was revealed in connection with jihad, but it was supplemented by another. Surah 229 has to do with divorce. How this fits in makes no sense. Surah 1690 is also strangely vague. So why did they cite verses that do not connect to the topic? Because they teach Muslims you cannot read the Quran unless you know Arabic. So they don't expect these kids to go look it up. They don't expect anyone to check. Sorry, I do that. I don't trust where I get my sources sometimes. I go back and I look to see if they're even the sources I trust, I'm going back and looking for their original stuff. Why? Because I like to get to that original document. No one's teaching kids the importance of this. It's extremely important. The third part of this is the sentence, of course, the life in question is of an innocent person. The word innocent is code to believers in Islam. It means Muslim. The verse quoted comes from Surah 532. Why is it not cited? Read and find out. Let's talk about what it says. Because of that, we ordained for the children of Israel that if anyone killed a person, not in retaliation of murder, and to spread mischief in the land, it would be as if he killed all mankind. And if anyone saved a life, it would be as if he saved the life of all mankind. And indeed, there came to them our messengers with clear proofs, evidence, and signs, even then, after that, many of them continued to exceed limits by doing oppression unjustly and exceeding beyond the limits set by Allah. Wait a minute. If anyone killed a person, this is about Jews. It's not about Muslims. Muslims don't have to worry about killing. So this was, so wait a minute. So who's being deceived here? That's why you go back and check sources. That's why you check, find out this was all, they're scamming us. They laugh at us because we don't check our sources. Think of this reference now. They're talking about Jews doing the killing. On top of this, the seventh grade textbook tells the Muslim children that this reference, references killing Muslims. One paragraph later, it states, however, the word jihad is most often associated with the act of physically confronting evil and wrongdoing. Hence, it can be applied to the act of fighting as well, Surah 3:110. But the goal of jihad is not to have a big war, gain riches, or kill people. It is to further the cause of Allah and to create justice on earth, Surah 5:8. When the evil is removed of the other side, wants peace, we are to make peace as well. A person who engages in jihad is called a mujahid, or struggler for Allah. Allah also explained to us why fighting is sometimes a part of jihad. He said, "Let those fight in the cause of Allah who sell the life of this world for the next life. To the one who fights in the cause of Allah, whether he is killed or achieves victory, we shall soon give him a great reward. And why shouldn't you fight in the cause of Allah? And those who being weak are mistreated, the men, women, and children, whose only cry is, O Lord, save us from this land, and whose people are oppressors, and bring to us from you someone who will protect us, and bring us from someone who will help. Those who believe in the cause of Allah and those who reject faith fight in the cause of Allah. So fight against the friends of Satan." Surah 4:74-76. The duty of Muslims here is communicated to be one where physical fighting is permitted against unbelievers. Not stated anywhere is why there is a statement that jihad is not for the gains, riches, or killing people. In Western civilization, war is seen as a last resort after talks have failed, or what happens when someone attacks without reason. The thoughts of getting rich never enter your thoughts but before the time of Muhammad. According to Sayyid Al-Maududi in Jihad in Islam, one of the causes of pre-Islamic war was a love of booty. It was the prize that you got from killing somebody. Maududi claimed that Arabs before Islam found regular work demeaning but loved battling to steal the wealth of others. Maududi also wrote of the hadith where Muhammad claimed that the purpose of jihad is not for money, it's not for honor, it is not for the war's sake alone, rather it's for the cause of Allah. Jihad under these hadiths is not self-defensive, its purpose is for the spreading of Islam alone. Here is one such example. A person said to the Prophet that there were those who undertook wars for gathering spoils, some for making gains in respect and power, and others to establish their reputation for bravery. After stating that he inquired of the Prophet as to which of these was in the cause of Allah, the Prophet replied that only war was in the cause of Allah, which was to spread his word. This was narrated by Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. If Maududi is correct here, and this hadith and others like it are accurate, the purpose of jihad is not defensive at all. Its sole purpose is for the cause of Allah. This statement could be equated with spreading Islam through the sword. But then Maududi believes he is writing only to Muslims, so his communication is more direct. Mohsin Khan's translation of 3:110 is revealing also about who they, the jihadis, intend to battle. From Mohsin Khan's translation. You true believers in Islamic monotheism and real followers of Prophet Muhammad and his sunnah legal ways are the best of the peoples ever raised up for mankind. You enjoined al-Ma'ruf, his Islamic monotheism and all that Islam has ordained, and forbid al-Munkar, polytheism, disbelief in all that Islam has forbidden. And you believe in Allah, and had the people of the scripture, Jews and Christians, believed, it would have been better for them among them. Are some who have faith, but most of them are al-Fasikun, disobedient to Allah, and rebellious against Allah's command. But let's look at one verse they skipped in Surah 2. Verse 98 is on topic. Sahih International says, whoever is an enemy to Allah and his angels and his messengers and Gabriel and Michael, then indeed Allah is an enemy to the disbelievers. Muhammad Sarwar. And as a confirmation of original scripture, and whoever is the enemy of God, his angels, his messenger, Gabriel and Michael, should know that God is the enemy of those who hide the truth. Mohsin Khan put this translation as, whoever is an enemy to Allah, his angels, his messengers, Jibril and Michael, then verily Allah is an enemy to the disbelievers. So is physical jihad the only form of jihad? Perhaps one of the most important pieces of knowledge on jihad and Islam was hidden from the public by the American government from 1950 until the 1960s. 50 years, think about that. Just about 50 years. In 1915, Ambassador Morgenthau sent a copy of a fatwa issued by the caliph that led to a genocide of the Armenian people and much more. Morgenthau communicated the violence in his autobiography, Dr. Morgenthau's Story, which is now available for free on the internet. Dr. Andrew Boston revealed this long-hidden fatwa in his book, The Legacy of Jihad, Islamic Holy War, and the Fate of Non-Muslims. It was published in 2005. The fatwa proclaims extremely important information that many refuse to acknowledge, namely that jihad is not only a physical battle, but the other levels of jihad are indeed extremely dangerous and can at times be seen as more dangerous than an actual bloody confrontation. Jihad in secret. This is the easiest and simplest. If, in this case, it's supposed that every believer, every unbeliever, is an enemy to persecute and exterminate him from the face of the earth. There is not a Muslim in the world who is not inspired by this idea. However, in the Quran, it said that such a war is not enough for a Muslim, whether young or old, and must also participate in the other parts of the holy war. The second level of jihad, jihad by word of mouth. That is to say, fighting by writing and speaking. And this comes from the 1915 fatwa. This kind of war, for example, should pertain to the Muslims of the Caucasus. They should have commenced this war 3 or 4 months ago because their actual position does not permit them to but the carrying on of such warfare. Every Muslim is in duty bound to write and speak against the unbelievers when actual circumstances do not permit him to assume more stringent measures. As for instances in the Caucasus, therefore, every writer must use his pen in favor of such a war. Now the one we all know is jihad, physical jihad. It means actual fighting in the fullest sense of the word. This kind of war is also subdivided into two parts, the lesser and the greater war. We've already gone over that. Even today, several imams in what some would call moderate Islamic countries openly state that jihad cannot be ended. Their reference is to a violent jihad. The Middle East Media Research Institute translated a YouTube of Kuwaiti Imam Sheikh Naji Al-Karas, which was uploaded on August 21st of 2020, his sermon that told the world that all the Arab peace agreements with Israel and the Jews, including the Camp David Accords, the Oslo Accords, and the Jordan-Israel peace agreement, are null and void because they abolish the jihad. He elaborated that it is impermissible to sign a permanent peace agreement with the enemy because jihad cannot be ended. In today's world, we often refer to people on jihad as terrorists. When we talk about 9/11 in America, we talk about terrorism. When people in Great Britain discuss 7/7, they talk about terrorism. Almost every attack that has been labeled as a terrorist attack is in truth related to jihad. Under President Barack Hussein Obama, an attack on an American consulate in Benghazi, Libya, resulted in the death of 3 good men, one of whom was the ambassador. These actions have all been called acts of terrorism. Laws have been written to create a class of crime labeled terrorism. The vast majority of those charged under these laws around the world are what Islam calls mujahideen, Islamic warriors on jihad. There has been little discussion openly on the topic of jihad as it relates to terrorism. Professionals who interview terrorists such as Dr. Ann Speckhard with ISCVE refuse to accept that Islam cannot be peaceful. Groups like ISCVE engage in the creation of de-radicalization programs and videos to influence new jihadis from joining specific groups such as the Islamic State, aka ISIS, without an understanding that jihad is part of Islam that cannot be removed. These, quote, professionals who claim to be concerned about ideology separate from extremist Islam, they're claiming that they can separate extremist Islam from Islam by claiming extremist Islam is the violent Islam. But if it's taught, yeah. This definition was given in the Interior Ministry of France, whose head of de-radicalization program presented to a group sponsored by the Middle East Forum. No attempt at an academic discussion seems to be allowed to determine if Islamic Jihad is indeed tied to three different levels of actions towards bringing about the conversions of nations to Islam. Who is stopping this? That is the question that must be asked and addressed. Who indeed? Why? If organizations that are Islamic are preventing these academic discussions, could it not be evidence of purposeful deception to allow their work to continue? Think about this. Why are they keeping us from learning these things? I can't believe I talked for over an hour on this, but my concern is that we have an incredible problem during Ramadan. It is bad. Oh, and I'm not live? Oh, boy. Huh. And I will have to figure that out later. Okay. And I will have to check. I thought this was working. And if I'm not, I'm going to be very angry. Hopefully someone can say hello. Thought I would be live right now. I'm just going to go to the places where I'm supposed to be live and check. I haven't done that. Maybe I need to. My understanding is that I would be live. And I have been on the air for what seems over an hour, and I'm being told I am not on the air. Great. And I don't know what's going on here. All of a sudden, I can't even get into my own. This is crazy. And I'm not seeing my live cast. Just test. Okay, so you can hear me. So I will go back and load this back up to the... So it's just BTR that's having a problem, and for right now, I will go back and upload that this later to BTR. I don't have an answer as to what is happening. So let's get going. I have to say that that was the tough stuff to get it through that book. I'm hoping to publish this book this week. We will see. I have so much more to do to get there, but we will see. Let's get into some more of the news. Now, I don't know if you're aware, but this week we had an attack in the United States. John Guandolo actually is questioning whether it is an attack, but let me read you the Breitbart article that makes me think it isn't a jihadi attack. Again, we should not be counting these as acts of terrorism. We should be counting these as acts of treason against the United States because they are considering themselves anti-American when they do these attacks. This article is, again, from Breitbart. It's called Suspect in Nashville Police Ambush ID'd as Salman Muhammad. The suspect in Tuesday night ambush and shooting of a Nashville police officer has been identified as 22-year-old Salman Muhammad. Fox 5 reported that Muhammad allegedly called 911 report his mother having been shot inside the home. He then allegedly opened fire on officers when they responded to the call. One officer, Brian Sherman, was shot in the left arm and transported to a hospital. At some point thereafter, Muhammad allegedly came outside the home and killed himself with his firearm. WKRN noted that Muhammad's mother and three siblings were at home at the time and were not injured. Metropolitan Nashville Police's Don Aaron said this was a ruse or setup to get the police to come to the house. Officer Sherman was released from the hospital later Tuesday night. Think about that. It was a setup. They said this. was a ruse. Was this an act of jihad? Probably. And there's, let's get to the next one here. A Miami imam said this week, if you love Jesus, Islam is for you. So Robert Spencer wrote a piece in PJ Media on this in response. I have to say I enjoy Robert Spencer's work. Dr. Fadi Yusuf Kablawi, imam of the Masjid As-Sunna on Nabiwa in North Miami, struck a blow for interfaith harmony recently when he preached a sermon in which he declared, if you truly love Jesus, then Islam is the religion for you. Kablawi's sermon was an excellent illustration of why Muslim persecution of Christians continue unabated in Nigeria and elsewhere. After declaring that Palestine is the land of Islam and we will take it back, Kablawi began a lengthy expatiation of Islamic martyrdom. Every true Muslim, Kablawi asserted, should talk to himself about dying as a martyr for the sake of Allah. Are you remembering where this was happening? Where this speech was given? Miami. Miami, Florida. He said, every true Muslim should talk to himself about dying as a martyr for the sake of Allah. The Prophet said, whoever does not do that is a hypocrite. Can you imagine? Quote, there is nothing higher than to die for what you believe. Kablawi then struck the victimhood pose that is so much, very much in fashion nowadays among Islamic advocacy groups in the United States, but they make people heroes because they die for what they believe. Only when it comes to Islam, our martyrs become terrorists. They come to talk to you about Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela didn't die for that, but he fought his whole life, and he was imprisoned for years for his cause, for whatever he believed in. Even though I had some reservations about what he believed, Gandhi, some story, was considered a hero because he died for what he believed in. The guy from Mexico, Che Guevara or whatever, a big guy, even Bob Marley died for his, you know what? He's a hero. Why do you praise these people? Because they died for what they believe in. So why is it forbidden for us when we say that the greatest level that can be attained to die for is what you believe in? For Allah, why you have double standards, hypocrites? Why? The biggest example of this hypocrisy, as far as Kablawi was concerned, was Christians' reverence of Jesus. All day long, you are bugging us that Jesus died for us. We don't believe that Jesus died for us. We don't even believe that Jesus died, period. Yet, but here you are praising Jesus because he died for what he believed in to save you from your sins. Why is it forbidden for us to die for our belief? Why has it become a big deal? Well, one reason, because Jesus didn't take anyone with him. By contrast, the Quran states, surely Allah has purchased of the believers their lives and their belongings, and in return has promised that they shall have paradise. They fight in the way of Allah and kill and are killed. Bawi doesn't mention that bit about killing non-believers and continues. And if you cry every day or when you go to church because Jesus died and he was tortured and all that, if you really hate that and feel bad for Jesus, then Islam gives you the answer. After all these years that they lied to you and told you that Jesus died, and here we Muslims are going to tell you that Jesus is alive. Yeah. Remember, this was said in Miami. I'm too disgusted to go much farther, but I wanted you to get a picture of who this guy is and the lies they are teaching. It is truly scary. Okay, let's keep going. I'm Guandolo, a former FBI agent understanding the threat, is concerned that the DHS secretary, Mayorkas, may not be fulfilling his oath of office. Now, this actually is important. So I'm going to read this article from John Guandolo's blog. Should DHS Secretary Mayorkas be prosecuted or fired. He writes, when objectively assessing the actions and policies, one has to wonder if Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Defense of Homeland Security, DHS, is an agent for a hostile foreign power entity or just criminally negligent. Since taking office, Secretary Mayorkas has made clear he puts America and the safety of American citizens, the rule of law, and the obedience to law at the bottom of his list of priorities, which is not what one might expect from a Cuban-born man whose parents fled Castro's Cuba as refugees and brought him to the United States as a child. When Secretary Mayorkas says his highest priority is to reunite foreign families illegally crossing into America and works to support these criminals instead of fulfilling the requirements of his office, he is in violation of his oath and U.S. law. Be clear, leaders in his position, in positions of authority who take the oath of office have a legal duty to know their official duties and know or conduct due diligence to know all enemies, foreign and domestic. Leaders do not get to say, I didn't know. For a man like Alejandro Mayorkas to not know or understand things, he is required to, by his oath and professional standards, like the application of federal law, which directly applies to his lawful duties, it equates to unprofessional conduct. The standard is not whether children are separated from their parents because of their parents' criminal behavior. When people die as a result of unprofessional conduct, like American citizens killed by the U.S. communists and jihadis, that's called criminal negligence. Think about that. When people commit criminal negligence, we put people in jail. A doctor can go to jail for criminal negligence. A lawyer can go to jail for criminal negligence. When a police officer arrests someone for driving while drunk and there are children in the vehicle, those children are separated from the family because their parent committed a crime. In domestic abuse cases, oftentimes one or both parents are separated from their children because a crime was committed by one or both of the parents. When people illegally cross any U.S. border, the expectation should be they will be arrested and processed per law. Those who unthoughtfully drag their children through this process are to blame for any separation of the children, not the government which defends its border. Again, when Secretary Mayorkas says his highest priority is to reunite foreign families illegally crossing into America, he is in violation of his oath and U.S. law. If people are in distress and want a safe haven, America is here as a beacon for the world. We have laws and process for people to legally enter the United States, but a nation which does not defend its borders will not survive. Those people in positions of authority like DHS Secretary Mayorkas should uphold their oaths and enforce the law or be prosecuted or at least fired for violating both. Well said, John Guandolo. Well said. If you want, send John Guandolo a note of praise. You can go to understandingthethreat.com. I think that is extremely important, what he wrote. Biden's ICE nomination is another thing. Now, we're going to get back into the jihad stuff still, but I do want to get into these things that have to be discussed first. We'll get through the America stuff and we'll get more into other acts of jihad in a minute. Biden's ICE nomination, this comes from Washington Free Beacon. Biden's ICE nominee pushed to release violent felons from his jail. Texas Sheriff Ed Gonzalez asked the DA to remove more than 1,500 inmates. President Joe Biden, this came from, this is by Alana Goodman, came out May 5th. President Joe Biden's nominee for director of ICE, the Texas Sheriff Ed Gonzalez petitioned the court earlier this year to force the mass release of inmates from his county jail. Many of them have been charged with violent crimes and felonies, according to court records reviewed by the Washington Free Beacon. Gonzalez had served as sheriff of Harris County, Texas, since 2017. Earlier this year, he filed an emergency request asking for a federal court to help negotiate the potential release of 1,500 inmates from the Harris County Jail, which he ran and which had an inmate population of around 9,000 at the time. He cited overcrowding, though the jail had housed nearly 10,000 in 2018. The request came as Harris County and its largest city, Houston, faced a massive spike in crime that many law enforcement advocates have attributed to lenient bond rulings that flooded the streets with criminals. Since 2015, homicide cases increased by 25% and assault cases nearly doubled, according to statistics compiled by the Harris County Justice Administration. Tom Homan, acting director of ICE under President Donald Trump and a senior fellow at the Immigration Reform Law Institute, said he's concerned about Gonzalez's actions as sheriff, and the nomination is drawing opposition from ICE employees. If you're a victim or witness, the last thing you need is a bad guy to get back into the community, said Homan. Morale's already in the toilet at ICE due to what Biden administration's done. How much more can ICE take? They've already been decapitated. In January, Gonzalez filed a motion for an emergency hearing with the Texas Southern District Court in an attempt to force the Harris County District Attorney's Office to release a significant portion of his jail population. The vast majority of inmates in the jail have been charged with felonies. At the time, the jail had 9,000 inmates, which was within typical range of the facility, and nearly 1,000 less the year before. Gonzalez argued that COVID drove the need to downsize, though he noted that the current number of inmates and staff testing positive is currently relatively small as of January. Think about this. This guy wanted to release 1,500 people into the area, and that's the kind of guy you really want heading felons. He wanted to release felons. Think about this. Just some of this stuff is truly, truly, truly shocking. Next up, we have, I think I'm going to run out of time. So what I want to do is I want to tell people to go to these articles. Please go to the Washington Free Beacon and look for their section on campus insanity update. Now, you're going to see this happening a lot, unfortunately, the campus insanity issue. It's very, very important you pay attention to it. What's happening on college campuses across the country is shocking. It's dangerous. It's beyond an understanding of evil. I do suggest you just go there. It's freebeacon.com. Look for the article entitled This Week in Campus Insanity. They're up to volume 42, people. Pay attention. This is shocking. Now, this next article is really repugnant. For those of you who love Disney, I have had several friends who love Disney. And after reading this one, I can't say there's any reason to support Disney. I think if you can support Disney and consider yourself a Christian, I think you have conflicts with sin. So let me read why. This comes from Ryan Foley from the Christian Post Reporter. Disney unveils LGBT rainbow colored toys and clothes as Gay Pride Month. They don't say gay, but Pride Month approaches. And this is in the Disney stores. The Walt Disney Company, well known for its family-friendly programming and theme parks, is promoting a series of toys and clothes for children decorated with the LGBT rainbow flag ahead of Gay Pride Month. Disney, which produces several television programs and movies designed for children and operates several theme parks worldwide that cater to children and families, has unveiled the Rainbow Disney Collection. Catalog of apparel and toys features rainbow-colored merchandise designed to honor the upcoming annual Pride Month in June that celebrates the LGBT community and movement. The countdown to Pride Month is on with a colorful array of Pride products available now, the Disney Parks Twitter feed announced on Monday. Several rainbow-colored hearts accompanied the announcement of the company's Pride Month collection. You have to ask yourself, what's the purpose of this group? What is the real purpose of Disney doing this? Are they targeting children for homosexuals? I mean, what is the real purpose? You just got to ask this question. Why would you put these toys out to children? Why would you target them to children? Is the purpose to create the more of the man-boy lovers association? I have concerns. Well, the only good news I have this week comes from Ludlow, Texas, in another article from the Washington Free Beacon. A city in Texas declares itself a sanctuary for the unborn after ballot initiative. Lubbock law will outlaw abortion if Roe v. Wade is overturned. Vampiro. It's on May 5th. Voters have made one of the largest cities in Texas sanctuary city for the unborn, passing an ordinance to automatically outlaw abortion in the event Roe v. Wade is overturned. Lubbock, a city in northwest Texas with a population of more than 2,500 people, became the 25th city to declare that abortion will be outlawed in the city in a post-Roe, post-plan.
Okay, next article. Okay, Ludlow. We're getting to the city of Ludlow. Okay, Ludlow states temporary inability to prosecute or punish those who violate its abortion statutes on account of Roe v. Wade does not change the fact that abortion is still defined as a criminal act under Texas law. The ordinance says it shall be unlawful for any purpose, any person, to procure or perform an abortion of any type at any stage of pregnancy in the city of Lubbock, Texas. Lubbock is the largest city to adopt such a ban. The ban would be most significant impact on Planned Parenthood clinics that opened in June of 2020. The state of Texas accounted for about 6% of U.S. abortions performed in 2017, according to the Pro-Abortion Guttmacher Institute. The institute reports that 55,440 abortions were performed in the state in 2017, a decrease of 3% from 2014. Voters made it clear that Lubbock will become the next sanctuary city for the unborn. Lubbock Mayor Dan Bedden, a statement, the ordinance takes direct aim at Planned Parenthood. It would allow citizens to take legal action against any person now from Planned Parenthood or other pro-abortion organizations to perform abortions of any kind. It does exempt procedures in the case of threats to the health of the mother or child. Please understand the importance of this. Please understand the importance of this. Now, I wish we could see more things like this happen. Unfortunately, it is not going to happen in Libland, New York, where I live. So getting back to Ramadan Bamathon, it's in full swing and will end next week. Currently, the number killed during Ramadan is, this is day 24. There have been 174 attacks and 877 people have been killed. It's already exceeded last year's total, which was 175 attacks and 718 kills. Now, if you think if I'm off on reporting that this time that Ramadan is considered a dangerous month, Al Jazeera is boasting that Ramadan is a month of jihad victories and victories. Some of these things, you just sit there and go, what? Yes, Al Jazeera. Now, Al Jazeera is the Muslim Brotherhood mouthpiece. And memory.org, the Middle East Media Research Institute, caught them. Let me just read some of this. It says one of the articles published on the website of Qatari Al Jazeera Network on the occasion of Ramadan is headlined, How the Palestinian Resistance Turned Ramadan into a Season of Attacks and Victories, written by Adnan Abu Amr, a Palestinian political science lecturer at Al Umma University in Gaza. The article notes that through throughout Muslim history, Ramadan has always been the month of jihad and victory, and that the Palestinian terror organizations take advantage of the spiritual atmosphere during this month and of the heritage of Muslim battles and victories that took place during this month throughout Muslim history. Oh, wait a minute. It's part of Islam that jihad happens during Ramadan. Did you catch that? And this is what a Muslim newspaper is bragging to other Muslims about. This is one of the reasons it pays to listen. Yes, to read what they're saying to each other versus what they're saying to us. Now we're going to go across the pond, the Atlantic Ocean, and take a look at what's happening in France real quick. There's a couple big things that have happened in France that we are not going to get even close to where I wanted to be. Oh, boy. We're running down of time. 7:43 already. Mobile phone of Nice Church terrorist, jihadi, reveals he planned to go to Paris. This was in Breitbart by Chris Tomlinson. Text messages obtained from the phone of Nice Basilica terrorist Brahim Aouissaoui revealed the Tunisian illegal immigrant. He allegedly came to France specifically to commit an act, and his original target was Paris. The more than 2,000 text messages sent by Brahim voyage from Tunisia to Nice via the migrant landing hotspot of Lampedusa revealed that he was in contact with someone in Paris on October 25th, just 3 days before his attack that killed three people. He had written from Rome, "Tomorrow I will leave for France, the land of the disbelievers and dogs." After arriving in Nice on October 27th, the 22-year-old Tunisian wandered around the area of the city's main train station and sent a text to a friend in Paris saying, "I'm still in Nice. I want to come to where you are, the Eiffel Tower, but the ticket is 150 euros. Samia Maktouf, a lawyer representing the family of one of the victims, said the text message showed the Tunisian had come to France specifically to carry out an attack, broadcasters reported. He wanted to hit Paris. Nice was a fallback because he didn't have enough money. Yeah. Hijra before jihad. You have to leave where you are. Go to another country to commit an act of jihad. That's what this is about. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I keep saying they've got to defend their own people, and they don't, and it just drives me nuts. I can't understand that. There is a bit of good news this week. In France, generals have been standing up and demanding that the truth be told, that there is a danger in Islam. And from Islam, this danger is crazy. It's crazy dangerous. I don't know what's happening that So I guess we're having some issues still with BTR. We'll find out. But let's get back into this week. Generals, along with many active and retired military, said enough is enough. Now, I want to point out an excellent article on this. I like Gatestone Institute. Now, Gatestone Institute is one of these organizations that I recommend. And if you can go to gatestone.org, please do. There's an article there titled France, Generals Warn of Civil War Due to Creeping Islam. This is what I call the cancer of civilization jihad or the cancer of Islamization. And that book should be out very, very soon, and tell you, it's sad. This is written by Thorne Kern. It came out May 4th. And because of the timeline I have, I'm just going to read the bullet points, so please forgive me. The warning comes amid a wave of jihadi attacks, including the beheading of a school teacher committed by young men, none of whom were previously known to French intelligence services. The letter also comes after widespread public indignation over a French justice system comprised by political correctness, as evidenced by the refusal to prosecute an African immigrant from Mali who, while shouting Allah Akbar, killed an elderly Jewish woman by breaking into her home and pushing her off a balcony. They said he was high, so he couldn't control himself. Yeah, he was on Mary Jane, so it's okay. Every Frenchman, this is a quote, every Frenchman, whatever his belief or non-belief, should, everywhere, be at home in continental France. There cannot and must not exist in any city district where the laws of the Republic do not apply, unquote. That's from an open letter signed by 20 retired generals, 100 senior officers, more than 1,000 other members of the French military. Quote, what is written in this letter is a reality. When you have a country plagued by urban guerrilla warfare, when you have a very regular and very high terrorist threat, when you have more and more glaring and flagrant inequalities, when you have a part of our patriots who are breaking up from society, we cannot say that the country is doing well. Rachida Dati, mayor of the 7th District of Paris. These harmful drifts, this is another quote, these harmful drifts do not result from a moment of distraction, but from a political direction driven by fundamentally corrupting ideological considerations. Marie Le Pen. I hope she gets into office. I hope she's able to save France. All we can do is hope at this point. There is so much more, and I'm running down on time. This weekend, Germany, an Islamic charity, was shut down on suspicion of financing terrorism. Al Jazeera reported on May 4th that 30 people were killed in Burkina Faso. The article calls them rebels. But if you read the article, you'll find out that they have links to Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So they are jihadis. They are not terrorists. They are not rebels. They are jihadis. There is a difference. Now, this is important to pay attention to because the sad truth is they're not giving you enough truth on this. We have to look, is there a difference between terrorism and jihad, or is this all jihad? That's one of the questions I'm going to be posing in the near future to an incredible expert that I will be pulling in on the topic of jihad in countries like Nigeria. So I'm hoping to have him either this week or next week, and we're hoping. 35 people were killed by jihadis in Nigeria's Borno state this past Sunday. This is bad, people. This jihad is not ending. It's every day, people. On May 1st, jihadis killed 19 people in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This week in Pakistan, Muslims nurses took over a chapel in a hospital and threatened Christian nurses, demanding they convert to Islam or be charged with blasphemy. And in Afghanistan, 3 women and a child were killed when a mortar shell from the Taliban hit their house. Yeah. Some of these things are horrible. I keep saying the ones who pay the biggest price are Muslims themselves. Sadly, this is more true than I ever want to admit. It is sad. It is horrible. It is a horrible, awful truth. I don't know what to tell you. Islam pays the biggest price for itself. It's hard. It's horrible. But if you follow Islam, you follow a religion that teaches you to hate. My suggestion, take a look at the Isa mentioned in your Quran. He is superior to Muhammad, according to your Quran. Passage on Isa. Now, Isa is not the correct name for Jesus. We know that. It doesn't say enough. But even Isa in the Quran is superior to Muhammad. So my suggestion is you start reading the Bible to find out more. There is a belief in Islam that the Bible is corrupted, but you can't find anything in the Quran that says that. Yeah, you can't. I challenge you. Find it. I am about out of air. I've been reading and sharing so long. I'm just going to say goodbye. And for those of you listening on BTR, I always sign off with one of my favorite songs, and so I'm going to have to figure out how to do it here. I have a favorite song for signing off, and it is Red, White, and Blue. And I think that's what we have to do is start having to play it here. I like Toby Keith's work. Here we go. Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down. Brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. When you rattle his cage, you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass.